The Blind Californian. Quarterly Magazine of the California Council of the Blind. Spring 2018. Volume 62, Number 2. Published in Braille, large print, audio CD, email, bc-subscribe at ccbnet.org, and online in readable and downloadable text and audio media. Judy Wilkinson, President, 1550 Bancroft Avenue No. 113, San Leandro, California, 94577-5264. Cell, 510-388-5079. President at ccbnet.org. Executive Office, California Council of the Blind, 2143 Hurley Way Suite 250, Sacramento, California, 95825. 916-441-2100 Voice, 916-441-2188. Email, ccotb@ccbnet.org. CCB is reinstituting a Southern California office under the leadership of Ken Metz. Phone, 805-991-7141. Website, www.ccbnet.org. Jeff Tom, Director Governmental Affairs Committee. 800-221-6359 Toll free, 916-995-3967 Cell. Governmental Affairs at ccbnet.org. Webmaster at ccbnet.org. Mike Keithley, Editor, 191 East El Camino Real No. 150, Mountain View, California, 94040. 650-386-6286. Editor at ccbnet.org. Susan Glass, Associate Editor, 408-257-1034. Editor at ccbnet.org. The California Connection is a weekly news service provided by phone in English and Spanish at 800-221-6359, Monday through Friday after 5 p.m. and all day on weekends and holidays. By email subscription. Send a blank message to connection-subscribe at ccbnet.org or on the web at www.ccbnet.org. Submissions for the California Connection can be emailed to ca.connection@ccbnet.org. Non-members are requested and members are invited to pay a yearly subscription fee of $10 toward the production of The Blind Californian. In accepting material for The Blind Californian, priority will be given to articles concerning the activities and policies of the California Council of the Blind and to the experiences and concerns of blind persons. Recommended length is 1,800 words. The deadline to submit material for the spring 2018 issue of The Blind Californian is noon, May 15, 2018. Shop at Amazon, donate to CCB. Access smile.amazon.com/ch/94-1265032. Please send all address changes to the Executive Office. Table of Contents. Editor's Desk, Mike Keithley. Unencumbered Funds, the CCB Goal for 2018, Judy Wilkinson. Never Give Up, Paul Shane. CCLVI announces the Dr. Sam Janensky Video Magnifier Memorial Awards. I Would Be A. Phil Conris, Susan Glass. Smart Paint, Ben Levine. Becoming Athena, Sarah Harris. NFB Newsline adds new publications to brighten your winter months. Major Gifts Ramp Up Condensed Proposal, Judy Wilkinson. CCB Board Minutes Summaries, Artis Bezin. Advocacy Update, Delta Policy Regarding Service Animals. CCB Officers and Directors. Editor's Desk, by Mike Keithley. Welcome to the Spring 2018 Blind Californian. I thought I was going to have to tell our membership that this issue of the BC would be slimmer than most. For one thing, I had a rough time getting material. Oh, it's too much work. Really? That's just terrible. Perhaps people have forgotten that the BC stands or falls on their participation, or lack of it. It's a bummer when I have to look around for material that wasn't written by CCB members. And then there's the sad juxtaposition of events, such as getting ready for the mid-year meetings and the lack of internet access in hotels. Luckily, CCB Fresno chapter member Sarah Harris came to the rescue with her Becoming Athena article. It brims with enthusiasm and athletic prowess, and once you read it, you'll never lie around in your easy chair again. You'll run and bike 15 miles before breakfast, and then crank out 2 BC articles while sipping coffee at your kitchen counter. You rock, Sarah. But Master, everyone's in a bit of a tizzy over the changes going on in CCB. That's true, King, and I hear even guide dogs are worried. But canes seem quite calm. Maybe I'll ask one to write something so we can appreciate why. At any rate, we have a nice president's message from President Wilkinson plus a pep talk from CEO Paul Shane. And Susan Glass submitted a great springtime story about falconry. We also have an important proposal dealing with getting donations to CCB from moneyed people. As President Wilkinson explained in a past message, sometimes you have to spend money to make money. Here's to success. Enjoy, be kind to one another, as Ellen DeGeneres says, and have fun. It will be great meeting you at the convention. Unencumbered Funds, the CCB Goal for 2018, by Judy Wilkinson. Last year our primary fundraising efforts centered on grant applications. Paul successfully applied for his third VISTA grant. We devoted a lot of time to recruiting, within a ridiculously limited time frame, training, over several days, a training in which many of you participated, and finally day-to-day supervision. Through unforeseeable circumstances, all three VISTAs were unable to complete their obligations for various reasons. In a nutshell, this VISTA experience demonstrates the limitations in seeking grants. First, one must provide services, which sometimes don't necessarily fit the organization's immediate needs. Second, a lot of staff time is spent administering the grant. Grants often come with contractual or structural requirements that don't fit our grassroots model. Not that grants are bad. Certainly we will continue some grant-seeking efforts. But there's nothing like unencumbered funds. Money which, with our newly adopted gift acceptance policy in place, we decide how to spend. Take the $35,000 from the lawyer in Santa Barbara who was looking for blindness organizations to complete the wishes of his deceased client. That was just a gift from the blue. For most donations, it takes a long time for fundraising to reach fruition. Major unencumbered fundraising activities for 2018 commence with our Dining in the Dark fundraiser. Next up, our fireworks booth, the last few days of June through July 4th. Board member Paul Patch is spearheading this wildly popular effort in the Sacramento area. Fast forward to our experience with the Nano workshop called Major Gifts Ramp Up. Nano, National Organization of Nonprofit Organizations and Executives, came to my attention late last summer because of a provocative book by Jimmy LaRosie called Reimagining Philanthropy, which shows exciting new ways of encouraging donations by focusing on donor needs and interests. I will put links to various formats of this book on our lists. While we cannot braille it for you, the office can provide a text file for your convenience. Several of us, board members Frank Welt, Charlene Ornelas, myself and my husband Steve Mendelson, attended a training where the Major Gifts Ramp Up, MGRU, model was presented. As a part of that training, CCB bought a very comprehensive package of materials, including a library of thousands of resource documents and training materials. In fact, a person can train online to become a financial development consultant, even a CEO. We own this set of materials forever, and we can give any CCB member access on an as-needed basis. That package includes Donor Scope, a database of millionaires. Elsewhere in this issue, you can read a condensed version of the proposal we will be working under with Development Systems International, another entity under the Nano umbrella. The usually slow process of friends building becomes expedited by following a very precise protocol that ensures success for reaching major donors. The model is projected over an 18-month period. We are beginning in the Sacramento area, but once we learn the process, we hope to implement elsewhere in future years. The idea is that, probably in the fall, we will hold an informational event for donors where we ask for no money but give them our newly revised case for support. From that group we winnow to a group which we invite to an ask event, early 2019, where we ask for single donations. From that group we narrow to a smaller number, after doing serious homework to more fully understand each prospect's range of commitments and interests. Then with the assistance of our project team, who will go with us, Paul and I, and perhaps a couple of others, will go on visits with a three-part ask a recurring fixed yearly donation amount, a stretch gift, say a new van, and third, inclusion in their long-term planning. While we will be asking several members to work closely with us, the beauty of this project is that no one who doesn't feel so inclined need be involved. We talked with organizations that have used this system who assured us that if we put in the time and develop the proper strategies, we will succeed. In his article in this issue, Paul speaks of exciting times ahead. With your support and enthusiasm, 2018 and 2019, CCB's 85th anniversary year, we'll see this organization once again achieve the financial stability to begin making our long-treasured dreams come true. Never Give Up, by Paul Shane. Never give up. This was the standard mantra that we adhered to when I served as a law enforcement officer in the United States Air Force, and is still relevant today. As you read this article, we will have concluded a very exciting and successful 2018 convention in Sacramento. Many of you had the chance to experience exciting and thought-provoking events, engage in stimulating conversations and ideological debates, or network with friends and business associates from across the state. 2018 is going to be an amazing year for the CCB. We will break the cycle of survival that we have been trapped in for many years, and stand together as we confidently walk the path to our future where we will thrive as a unified statewide organization that has one mission, one vision and one voice. There will be scary and frustrating times ahead, but there will also be triumphs and accomplishments that will lead to the CCB becoming the organization others will hold up as a model of success. The current state of the CCB can bring a frown to even the most devoted member's face, and wear down energy levels and motivation to move forward, but we must always continue our forward momentum. The true strength of an organization lies in its character. Character is not measured in how many hits that you can endure. It is measured in how many hits that you take and get back up and continue to move forward. And so, my friends, I have a challenge for you. When things seem to be at their bleakest, find a way to move forward in a positive direction. When things get especially tough, draw from your core being, suck it up and press on, another military term. Think as a person who is blind or with low vision, how many times and how many people who have said no to you or dismissed you out of hand during your lifetime. Where would you be now if you had let them stop you? Where are you now because you did not let them dissuade you from your path and continued to move forward in a positive manner? It is time to get busy living or to get busy dying, Shawshank Redemption, as an organization. I chose life and am confident that with your help and support, we can overcome any obstacles in our path. You are the strongest and most courageous people that I have ever known, and I am honored to share in your journey. CCLVI announces the Dr. Sam Janensky Video Magnifier Memorial Awards, application now available. The Council of Citizens with Low Vision International, CCLVI, announces the Dr. Sam Janensky Video Magnifier Memorial Awards. At least three video magnifiers will be awarded to children and adults in 2018. To read the award guidelines and complete an online application, please visit the website www.cclvi.org/dr-samuel-janensky. To submit an application, complete the following steps. 1. Register. 2. Log in and 3. Complete the application. Links are available for each of these steps from the URL above. Applications may be submitted through March 31, 2018 at 11:59 p.m. EST. We look forward to receiving your application materials. For more information about CCLVI, visit www.cclvi.org. I Would Be a Phil Conrus, by Susan Glass. I am happiest when spending time outdoors, especially in wild places where birds abound. On Friday, January 19th, I had the outdoor experience of a lifetime. My friend Leanne Nakagawa and I spent a day at West Coast Falconry, one of three facilities in the United States where laypersons can, under the supervision of master falconers, interact with and fly falcons and hawks. West Coast Falconry is located on Spring Valley Road in Marysville, California, on 110 acres of rolling grasslands and oak groves. The hawks, owls and falcons that live there are kept by day in what is called a weathering yard, which consists of spacious enclosures for each bird, with plenty of perches, foliage, water, and food. At night, the birds are housed in an indoor shelter called a mew to protect them from predators. Falconry is one of the most ancient hunting partnerships that exists between people and animals. It predates the use of firearms. Both men and women hunted with falcons. The birds would fetch the prey, and their human handlers would divide it fairly so that both bird and handler got enough to eat. We are talking about substantially large prey animals here, rabbits, pheasants, and ducks. The sport of falconry still exists today, but many of its practitioners are also active conservationists who educate the public and fight to protect the species. Indeed, master falconers were responsible for saving peregrine falcons from extinction when the widespread use of DDT reduced their numbers to just 20 birds. Thanks to diligent falconers, peregrines are no longer endangered. The outing in which Leanne and I participated was not a hunt. We merely exercised the birds. Our instructors, Jana and Kate, were happy and comfortable working with a blind person. They were great sighted guides and hands-on teachers. It was thrilling to walk through the meadows carrying a Harris hawk named Mariposa on my left wrist. Hawks have sharp talons that will lacerate your naked skin, so you carry them on a thick, leather glove, holding their restraining leash tightly in your fist. You hold your arm level as though balancing a cup of coffee. The hawk wears a cloth hood as you carry it, which keeps it calm. When you are ready to fly it, you remove its hood, unfasten its leash, stretch your arm horizontally in the air at about shoulder level, and open your fist. The hawk often remains perched on your arm for a few seconds or even a few moments, but when it's ready to fly, it rouses, straightens and shakes all of its feathers, and then takes off. We took turns flying Mariposa, calling her to our gloves by holding out pieces of raw quail meat. We also flew two falcons, one named Cubby and another named Benny. Our morning brimmed with amazing sounds, the tinkling bells worn by the falcons, the beeping and static of the radio transmitters that they also wear, the whistle calls that Jana and Kate use to summon the birds, the whizzing of falcon wings heading toward us at 100 miles per hour. Their maximum speed is 240 miles per hour, which is faster than a running cheetah. I learned much that day about the differences between hawks, falcons, owls, and vultures. Falcons are long-winged birds capable of high, swift flights and speedy descents. Our teacher Jana calls them heat-seeking missiles. In contrast, hawks are short-winged raptors that execute sharp turns and shotgun flights close to the ground. It's dangerous to fly more than one falcon at a time since they attack one another. So, when we brought Cubby and Benny into the meadow to fly them, we placed one in a hooded box to rest while we flew the other. Harris hawks, on the other hand, are content to hunt together. They are affectionately referred to as the Labrador Retrievers of the raptor world. Jana told us about a wild male Harris hawk who had an injury that kept him from hunting. So, he stayed home and babysat juveniles while their mothers brought food to he and the babies. Master falconers Jana and Kate are women of conscience. They refrain from hunting with their hawks and falcons in mid-spring when prey animals such as quail and rabbits are birthing and raising their young. This practice ensures that prey populations remain stable. Nor will they fly their birds in extremely hot weather. If you visit West Coast falconry in summer, you'll probably spend time with the birds on shaded lawns near their aviaries. It's difficult to become a falconer. You must find a master teacher who will sponsor you, and you must study hard to learn animal husbandry practices, and also log several hours working alongside a master falconer. You are first an apprentice, then a mid-level practitioner, and finally a master. There are exams to pass and licenses to obtain. To be a falconer is to advocate reverence for, and protection of wildness. It involves knowing in and with your own body, that a predatory bird is not vicious. It is intelligent and powerful, and it earns a dignified living. It is also beautiful, and its voicings, though rarely melodious, are varied and rich. I have several recordings of raptors, red-shouldered hawks, red-tailed hawks, Harris hawks, sparrow hawks, and prairie falcons. You can find such recordings on YouTube, but the best are found on the Cornell Lab of Ornithology website under the Macaulay Library Recordings link. You might also visit the West Coast Falconry website, where you can read about all who teach there, as well as about the birds, and the kinds of tours and hands-on experiences that are available. If anyone is interested, I am compiling a list of books, articles and recordings about falconry, and I'm including as many materials as possible from Bard and Bookshare. Please contact me if you would like this bibliography. Smartpained, by Ben Levine. February 12, 2018. In this installment of the Innovation of the Month series, we explore the use of smart technologies to help blind and visually impaired people better navigate the world around them. A team at Ohio State University has been working on a smart paint application to do just that. Metro Labs Executive Director Ben Levine sat down with John Lanuti, Professor of Materials Science Engineering at Ohio State University. Mary Ball Swartwout, Orientation and Mobility Specialist at the Ohio State School for the Blind. And Josh Collins, Chief Technology Officer at Intelligent Material to learn more. Ben Levine, could you please describe what Smart Paint for Networked Smart Cities is? Who is involved in this project? John Lanuti, OSU, the goal of Smart Paint for Networked Smart Cities is to assist people who are blind and visually impaired by implementing a smart paint technology that provides accurate location services. You might think, can't GPS do that? But, surprisingly, current GPS-based solutions actually cannot tell whether somebody is walking on the sidewalk or down the middle of the street. Meanwhile, modern urban intersections are becoming increasingly complex. That means that finding a crosswalk, aligning to cross and maintaining a consistent crossing direction while in motion can be challenging for people who are visually impaired. And of course, crosswalks aren't the only challenge. For example, our current mapping technologies are unable to provide the exact location of a building's entrance. We have a technology solution to those challenges. Smart paint is created by adding exotic light converting oxides to standard road paints. The paint is detected using a smart cane, a modified white cane that detects the smart paint and enables portal-to-portal guidance. The smart cane can also be used to notify vehicles, including autonomous vehicles, of a user's presence in a crosswalk. As part of this project, we have a whole team of educational, city and industrial partners, including educational partners, Ohio State School for the Blind. Testing and implementation of smart paint technology in Columbus involving both students and adults, Western Michigan University, implementation of smart paint technology with travelers who are blind and visually impaired to maximize orientation and mobility. Mississippi State University, the impacts of smart paint technology on mobility and employment for people who are blind and visually impaired. City partners, Columbus Smart Cities Initiative, roll out of smart paint within Columbus and the paint's interaction with the Integrated Data Exchange, IDE, a cloud-based platform that dynamically collects user data to show technological impact. The City of Tampa, Florida, roll out of smart paint at the Lighthouse for the Blind. The Hillsborough Area Transit Regional Authority, Hillsborough County, Florida. Integration of smart paint with existing bus lines to enable precise location determination. The American Council of the Blind, implementation of smart paint with the annual American Council of the Blind Convention. Metro Lab Network, smart paint implementation in City University partnerships. Industrial collaborators, intelligent material, manufactures and supplies the unique light converting oxides that make the paint smart. Crown Technology, paint manufacturing, product evaluation and technical support. SRI International, design and manufacturing of the smart white cane hardware. Levine, can you describe what this project focused on and what motivated you to address this particular challenge? Lanuti, we have been working with intelligent material in integrating light converting oxides into polymeric matrices for specific applications for several years. Intelligent material supplies these oxides for highly specialized applications across a variety of industries, and has deep experience in filtering and processing the resulting optical outputs. They were already looking at using this technology for automotive applications when the idea to develop applications for people who are blind was introduced. We were extremely fortunate to have the Ohio State School for the Blind, OSSB, right here in Columbus and even more fortunate to have interested collaborators there who have helped us at every step of the way. They even have a room filled with previous white cane technologies. We used those to better understand what works and what doesn't, helping refine our own product. At about this same time, the National Science Foundation released a call for smart and connected communities proposals, which gave us both a goal and a home for this idea. Levine, what need motivated this collaboration? Why did you decide to partner with Ohio State University to meet this need? Mary Ball Swartwout, at Ohio State School for the Blind, we work with students of all ages and abilities. OSSB's orientation and mobility team, which includes me, Phil Northrup and Rachel Smith, is very familiar with the challenges our students face in navigating cities. Orientation and mobility training is essential for students' navigation within the outside world, but we are always searching for additional technologies that could make our students' travel more efficient. When Ohio State University and Intelligent Material approached us, our team was very interested because their technology better integrated into the modern world than past products. None of the prior products have created a lasting benefit for many of our students, and we enthusiastically support any new tools that help our students to enhance travel skills. Levine, how will the tools developed in this project impact planning and the built environment? Ball Swartwout, one of the great things about Smart Paint is that it can be added to the built environment easily at little extra cost. We expect that once Smart Paint is widely adopted, most sighted users will not notice much difference as Smart Paint is not visually different from regular road paint. Some intersections might need to have more paint features that enable smart white cane guided entry from the sidewalk into the crosswalk. Paint that tells users that they have reached their destination may become visible as horizontal stripes along modern sidewalks. These paints could be either gray or black or even invisible to sighted pedestrians, but would still be detectable by smart white canes to tell users that they have arrived at their destination. Levine, what business need motivated this collaboration? Josh Collins, Intelligent Materials, we specialize in the design and manufacturing of rare earth doped nanocrystals capable of converting light energy up and down the visible spectrum. Our core intelligent material technology enables up to parts per billion sensitivity of detection. Nothing found in nature converts light in the same way, and the prospects for widespread application of these patented oxides into road and sidewalk paint worldwide are very attractive to us from the business perspective. Discovering a range of additional business and academic partners dedicated to helping people who are blind and visually impaired has been very encouraging. Levine, can you tell us about the new technologies that are associated with this project? Can you talk about the status quo versus your vision for the future? Collins, beyond converting ceramics in paint, placing a highly sensitive excitation source and detector package at the tip of a moving white cane is truly novel. Also challenging is powering this package using minimal battery weight to decrease the likelihood of wrist and upper neck fatigue. The paint behaved normally during the installation. The status quo is that the travel of citizens who are blind and visually impaired can be unpredictable. They need better technologies for routine travel and especially for travel to any new destinations. In addition, we anticipate that this technology could assist in the travel of people who have a variety of physical and cognitive impairments. Our vision for the future of this technology is that it will be widespread and utilized constantly. Outside the US, Japan and Europe have integrated relatively expensive technologies into streets and sidewalks, and we see smart paint replacing that very quickly. Because the pain of installing smart paint is very small, we believe that grassroots pressure will enable rapid introduction of this technology. Levine, what are some of the other applications for this technology? Collins, it turns out that the same technology that informs users who are blind which way they should go can be used to tell airport ground vehicles which way they should not go. Runway incursions of ground vehicles in an active airport could lead to terrible accidents if a rapidly moving jet were to collide with one of these vehicles. These incursions can involve vehicles, general aviation traffic, and other large air carriers. To address this, we are also looking at deploying smart paint at airports. We have worked with OSU to successfully add smart paint to hold bars at the Ohio State University Airport in Northwest Columbus. This enables unique optical signatures to provide warnings to both ground vehicle operators and pilots to eliminate incursions. The corresponding visual, audible or tactile warning signals triggered by passage over the smart paint will prevent unauthorized ground vehicle or plane passage. This will satisfy the need for updated safety enhancements that benefit airport operational performance. Levine. What was the most surprising thing you learned during this process? Lanotti, in my mind, the most surprising thing was discovering that sound was not necessarily the best means of guiding users who are blind. This is a bias on the part of sighted individuals as they are used to beeping and buzzing noises that guide or inform them throughout our day. Pedestrians who are blind, on the other hand, need to constantly listen to aspects of their environment to fully navigate it. For example, listening to traffic noise is extremely important to them as a means of avoiding danger. People who are blind or visually impaired cannot see but need to hear their environment. So we had to dial back our expectations regarding the utility of sound. Instead, we now focus on vibration along the white cane as a means of alerting the user. Paul Swartwout, the OSSB orientation and mobility team, has been surprised to learn how rapidly technology is advancing to give people with visual impairments greater potential independence. Also, the high level of interest and excitement on the part of the staff and students at the OSSB regarding this project has been amazing. Levine, where will the project go from here? Lanotti, we are preparing for a proposal submission to the National Science Foundation at the end of February. We are looking for considerable support from industry, particularly in the area of software development. We believe that with the right partner, this idea can easily create a Google Maps for people who are blind, thereby increasing the travel abilities of a wide range of individuals who have disabilities. Paul Swartwout, thanks to the City of Columbus, we now have several acres of smart paint applied across walks and sidewalks across our campus. We are looking forward to institutional review board approved testing of this technology, utilizing our students and adults who are blind and visually impaired in the community. Professors Dae Kim and Robert Wall Emerson from Western Michigan University will visit us to work with our students in quantifying crossing efficiency and other safety factors associated with smart white cane assisted travel. Becoming Athena, by Sarah Harris. You could be an Athena. That is what the text message from California Council of the Blind CEO Paul Shane said. I spent the next 2 hours wondering what in the world that may be. When I called him, he told me about an amazing organization called Project Athena Foundation. What can I say? I was intrigued. The next day I scoured the Project Athena website while I sat on the beach in Cayucos. I read the stories of past Athenas and Zoses. I read about people who had strength, will, and perseverance. All the stories had the same theme. Going on a PAF adventure changed their lives. As usual, I am going too quickly. I am sure that you are all asking, what is this Project Athena Foundation that you speak of? What do they do? What are these adventures that you speak of? Well, I will tell you. The Project Athena Foundation was founded by badass adventure racer Robin Benincasa to help women who have a setback in life get their badass back too. How do they do this? By taking these women, Athenas, and now men, Zeuses, on amazing adventures and turning them into athletes. There is the Florida Keys to Recovery, which entails not only a bike ride but a kayak trip as well. There is the Grand Canyon Rim to Rim, and if that's not enough for you, there is also a Rim to Rim to Rim. And there are many others. You will have to check out the website to learn more, projectathenafoundation.org. So fast forward to a couple of weeks after I got that text. I was racing to fill out the application and I had to decide to add a twist. I wanted my daughter, Carson, to join me. My life may have changed when I became blind in a car accident 15 years ago, but that same accident changed her life as well. When she was little and she drew me a picture, she had to tell me what it was. When she started school, she had to read her report card to me. Probably most kids dream, haha. Lucky for me, my kid gets excellent grades. We have had to deal with public transportation, keeping ourselves occupied while waiting for paratransit, and yes, a lot of walking. However, we didn't know what we were in for when we were chosen to be Athenas for the San Diego Cove to Harbor adventure. I will tell you that I have never considered myself an athlete by any means. I was the girl that worked very hard to get a PE. I didn't play any sports. Instead, I was a theater geek. Caring more about how fast I could memorize a monologue, rather than how fast I could run a mile. So, needless to say, when I checked out the training module that Carson and I would have to complete the 4 months prior to Cove to Harbor, I was slightly scared. I asked myself, can you really do this? I told myself, of course you can. Carson and I set out on our training. We joined a gym, which I had never done before, and bought some good shoes. My trusty Converse weren't going to hack it. The training module included different plans for each week. Some days we would need to walk X amount of miles in X amount of time. We also needed to do some cross training as well. I learned more about the different exercise contraptions, I mean machines that our gym had to offer. I came to realize that I actually like to work out. As a person who is blind though, there is always the problem of time management where transportation is concerned. I live on the outskirts of Fresno where there is not a regular bus route available, so I need to use paratransit or Lyft to get me where I need to go. Using paratransit could sometimes take 2 hours. Using paratransit to the gym that is only a 20-minute car ride, and Lyft could get expensive. It was then that I learned about Isree Fitness and got a hold of a couple of the workouts. These were fantastic, not only because I was able to work out in my home when I couldn't make it to the gym, but the exercises were beautifully explained in an audio format that I could follow. This totally solved my problem, and I thank Mel Scott for inventing these amazing workouts. I believe it is week 12 in the training module where you are required to turn in evidence that you have done a 10 or 12 mile walk. Carson decided that it would be best if we mapped out a destination in town that we would be rewarded with awesome food. What can I say? We love to eat. We set out early on a July Saturday morning to beat the heat. Our walk took us something like 4 hours with breaks at Starbucks, 7 to 11 for a Slurpee, and a stop at my in-laws to dip our feet in the pool. Our destination was Chubby's Diner. When we reached the door, I could not believe that we had actually done it. It was truly a feeling of accomplishment that I had never felt before. About 2 weeks before actual marathon, there was another required walk to be completed. 18 miles. I started this one out with my friends at a walk to end Alzheimer's, and then went over to Woodward Park where we met up with our friends that we affectionately call the boys, and continued to add steps and miles to my Fitbit application display. When I returned home, I still needed 7.5 more miles. I decided that the only thing that I could do was finish the mileage in my house. I ran, I walked, and I jogged all over the house. My husband thought that I was crazy, I'm sure. When I finished, I took a screenshot of my accomplishment and sent the photo to my adventure coach Vanessa. When I told her that I finished the requirement in my house, she laughed. I am sure that she was thinking only the crazy blind lady. September 29th came and it was time to fly to San Diego. Carson had never flown before, so I consider the flight to be her pre-adventure adventure. We arrived in San Diego, where we met up with my cousin, Regina, and her little family and had lunch. We returned to the airport and met up with Robin, her brother Jack, and Christina, who is a previous Athena who was joining us for Cove to Harbor. Carson and I immediately felt like we were with family. That night we went out to dinner with others that would be joining us. I totally felt connected with Angie, who with two of her closest friends was joining us from Kentucky, and I still talk to her to this day. The morning of the walk, we met some of our new friends in front of the hotel and jumped in the van driven by Robin. I will be honest. I wasn't feeling so confident about the whole thing. I was worried that I wouldn't be fast enough, that my legs would give out on me, and I have to say I was worried about if I would have to use the bathroom. Ha ha. At the starting line there was a lavish assortment of food laid out. From bagels to gummy bears, they had it. We all gathered in a circle and told a little about ourselves. We then shared a granola bar amongst all of us to make things official. We were now family. We would all start together and finish together. We were bonded. We walked alongside highways, over Mount Soledad, through the heart of San Diego, past college campuses, on the sandy beach, the busy boardwalk, and roads overlooking cliffs where we were lucky to see beautiful weddings where we shouted out our congratulations to the happy couples. The walk took us about 11.5 hours. Like I said, we all started together and we all finished together. Carson and I led the group across the finish line where we were met by our supporters along the way. We then had pizza and wine to celebrate. I have never felt so tired, so happy, so elated, and so euphoric at the same time. Project Athena definitely changed my life. I want to end this by saying that you never know what you can accomplish until you try. Jumping out of your comfort zone can be one of the most rewarding things that you can do in your lifetime. NFB Newsline adds new publications to brighten your winter months, edited from the ACB Leadership List. NFB Newsline announces the addition of several new publications. We have added Ebony Magazine. Ebony is the number one source for an authoritative perspective on the African American community. Ebony reflects the cross-section of Black America as delivered by our best thinkers, our trendsetters, our activists, celebrities, and next-generation leaders. Ebony ignites conversation, promotes empowerment, and celebrates aspiration. They are the heart, soul, and pulse of Black America and a catalyst for reflection and progression. We have also added Science Daily and Scientific American Online. These are both breaking news sources. Science Daily aggregates press releases and publishes lightly edited press releases, a practice called journalism, about science, similar to PHYS.org and Eurek Alert. It was founded by a married couple named Dan and Michelle Hogan in 1995. Scientific American was founded by inventor and publisher Rufus M. Porter in 1845 as a four-page weekly newspaper. Throughout its early years, much emphasis was placed on reports of what was going on at the U.S. Patent Office. It also reported on a broad range of inventions, including perpetual motion machines, an 1860 device for buoying vessels by Abraham Lincoln, and the universal joint, which now can be found in nearly every automobile manufactured. Scientific American Online was launched in 1996 and includes articles from current and past issues, online-only features, daily news, weird science, special reports, trivia, Sudoku, and more. Lastly, we have added Hollywood Reporter, another breaking news source. The Hollywood Reporter, THR, was founded in 1930 and focuses on the Hollywood film industry, television, and entertainment industries, as well as Hollywood's intersection with fashion, finance, law, technology, lifestyle, and politics. To find Ebony Magazine using the telephone access method, press 7 off the main menu for magazines. To find Science Daily, Scientific American Online, or Hollywood Reporter, choose option 5 for newspapers in another state and then option 1 for breaking news. You can read these publications using the iOS app by choosing Publications, Publication Options, and then All Publications and searching for your publication of choice. We hope you enjoy these exciting new additions to the service. Your NFB Newsline Team. Editor's Note: the traditional NFB Newsline is accessed through your telephone, though there is now an iOS app. It's a free facility to read newspapers and magazines. To subscribe, call 866-504-7300 or visit www.nfbnewslineonline.org/signup.htm. Major Gifts Ramp Up Condensed Proposal, by Judy Wilkinson. Below you will find a condensed version of the proposal submitted to us by Development Systems International, mentioned in my president's message. The board unanimously approved contracting to work with DSI on a month-by-month basis. Our DSI team leader, Louis Fawcett, will be presenting at the Friday afternoon general session of the CCB Conference and Convention. The first 4 months of service center on organizational development, case for support, and new donor prospecting is an overall campaign plan. This process will build a foundation from which CCB will launch a successful major gift campaign. Development Systems International, DSI, will then design and implement individual plans of care that strengthen the composition of local core groups, major donors, corporations, foundations, and leadership networks to reach our campaign goal. DSI will also oversee, execute, and participate in the direct solicitation of major gifts on behalf of CCB. For 25 years, DSI's Major Gifts Ramp Up program has ensured that organizations properly identify, engage, cultivate, and invite individuals of means to stand with their respective organizations. DSI has worked with over 400 nonprofit organizations around the world, ensuring that their leadership accomplishes the mission and vision entrusted to their care. Nonprofits who implement the Major Gifts Ramp Up model oversee campaigns that come in over goal, are completed on schedule, are executed under budget, result in happy volunteers, produce grateful donors, and promote community pride. 1. In advance of our first on-site service day, OSD, CCB will complete DSI's Comprehensive Campaign Diagnostic, CCD. The CCD is a confidential detailed assessment of your nonprofit that will assist our team as we lay a foundation for future expansion and development. 2. CCB leadership and your DSI counselors will determine who will execute the approved campaign plan and determine what group of administrators will take responsibility to monitor the execution of the plan on a daily, weekly, monthly basis. 3. The team will identify key leaders who represent different levels of sponsorship who should be cultivated, engaged, and oriented to the proposed campaign plan. 4. Every nonprofit is broadly comprised of leadership, operations, staff, environment, and technology. These dimensions will be inventoried and the needs costs of each will be identified to determine a proper funding project campaign goal. 5. Making the case for support is the quintessential development task for any nonprofit. The process of determining case for support elements must reflect the unified vision of all the individuals responsible for organizational stewardship. 6. Key team members will create step-by-step task maps containing numerous assignments that, when executed in order and on time, will ensure campaign success. 7. Using Donor Scope, the database Judy described earlier, the team will first download complete contact information of major donors whose net worth exceeds $1 million and who live within the service footprint of your nonprofit. 2nd, the team will add comprehensive wealth and financial information to each person or family in their existing database file. 3rd, the team will create lists of known community champions, board members, and major donors who can join your nonprofit by sharing a major gift. The final step will be to record the first and last name of each prospect and then cross-reference this information against both the secured lists and internal file. 8. A non-fundraising awareness event will be held to publicly introduce the case for support to identified campaign prospects. The purpose of an awareness event is twofold. First, it creatively invites the right prospects to learn about your mission. Second, it encourages your existing supporters to become more meaningfully involved. 9. Cultivation strategies will be created that intentionally move each prospect into greater involvement with the organization. Ask, see Judy's President's message objectives will be determined, see list below, and then supported by written individual plans of care, IPOC, for each prospect. 10. The signature ask event model will be deployed to both cultivate major donor prospects and raise smaller amounts of money in the short term. The signature ask event provides first-time major donor prospects the opportunity to make their first token gift in advance of their participation in campaign interviews. 11. Campaign cabinet members will emerge from the cultivation process. These volunteers are responsible to make the ask and to invite their peers to join the campaign and match their personal financial investment. Campaign leadership's confidence is dramatically increased when they are included in the following decision-making processes. One of the most crucial elements of success in this process will be the identification and solicitation of top gifts. Statistical analysis suggests that the top gift will be in the range of 20% of the goal. The top 10 commitments, including the first one, will be as much as 50% to 60% of the goal or success is in jeopardy. Another 30 gifts will usually equal as much as 30%. 12. The strongest volunteers will be trained in how to make the three-part ask, including multi-year operational commitments, and one-time project investment and endowment gift. 13. Each campaign visitor will be equipped with a very specific set of collateral documents that keep a visitor on message and provide them the confidence they need to make the ask. These documents generally include performance, initial 120 days service deliverables, perform development audit to determine existing staff, technology, leadership, resources available to support your major gifts ramp up campaign. Apply donor-driven philosophy of fundraising to both new and existing initiatives, lead board, administration, and staff through organizational development processes. Develop both institutional and project case for support. Calendar 1-year advancement agenda, recording timelines and benchmarks. Originate new major donor prospect file. Determine theme, venue, and uniqueness of awareness visibility events, guide the process for establishing an initial campaign steering committee. Oversee the creation of invitation packages promoting awareness event. Plan awareness events that introduce case for support. Begin collateral document development for all new initiatives. Contract terms, for services outlined in this proposal, CCB will be charged a contract fee of $3,600 per month plus pre-approved travel expenses. Severance, this agreement is subject to cancellation by either party on 30 days written notice. CCB Board Minutes Summaries, compiled by Artis Bazin, CCB Secretary. April 6, 2017 Summary, approved June 15. Judy Wilkinson called the April 6 board meeting to order and Artis called the roll. Gail Crossan was absent. Jean Lozano suggested CCB having CDs of the convention program. Patrick brought a prototype of a seated treadmill for members to test, requesting feedback. The board accepted the March 9th board meeting minutes. The board approved the ratification of the previously passed email motion to officially name the exhibit room the Abby Showman Exhibit Room for the next 5 years. The board accepted the treasurer's report as presented. Rob Turner gave the report of the ad hoc committee on alternate ways to attend conventions. The board accepted the report and for the committee to continue for another year. Donna Pomerantz and Debbie Cordero gave the Mutstrut report. The profit for this event was $16,122.99. Louis Herrera with Hugo had the largest donor amount, $2,535. Judy Wilkinson with Carly was second. Southern Cal Gas donated $5,000 and the Pasadena Lions Club donated $3,000. The Louisiana, Canada, Kiwanis also donated $3,000. There were 35 fundraising pages, 115 donors, 120 registrants for the event, and 12 vendors. The raffle was won by the San Gabriel Area Chapter. The board accepted the report. Paul gave a report on the office relocation. He outlined his case for support document, created with assistance from several CCB members, focusing on one vision, one mission. He mentioned the success of the Tommy T's comedy event. The Sacramento Marriott will host the 2018 Dining in the Dark experience during the next CCB convention. He discussed a statewide walkathon and other possible projects. The meeting adjourned at 9:15 p.m. Teleconference Minutes Summary, June 15, 2017, approved October 12. Judy called the meeting to order. When Artis called the roll, Gail Crossan and Charlene Ornelas were absent. The board accepted the April 6 minutes. The board ratified an email vote approving CCB writing a brief in the Domino's Pizza case for Guillermo Robles. The brief would be written by Eve Hill representing all parties. The board approved leasing the CCB office to the Hurley property. Vita gave the technical operations group report, and the board accepted it. The treasurer's report was postponed. Jeff reported that convention committees were appointed. Judy said details would be coming about the Canes Across California effort. Gabe said his committee is moving forward with a new constitution and bylaws as one document. Judy thanked the outgoing board members and welcomed the new ones. The meeting was adjourned. CCB Board Teleconference Minutes Summary, August 10, 2017, approved October 12. Judy called the board meeting to order and all board members were present. Paul gave his CEO's report. He mentioned grants for about $5,000 for in-kind donations that were received. Other grants are pending for over $225,000. Paul will place recruitment opportunities in emails as soon as he gets back from his training in Arizona. There was a Canes Across California discussion about the correct Facebook page. It is CCB Sacramento. Sarah Harris is the co-chair on Dining in the Dark. 270 tickets have been purchased. CCB is looking for auction items. A DJ has been hired for the event. There will be a live auction of touch painting. Sponsors are being sought. The lease for the new office location has been signed, so the move will occur in early November. JAWS software will cost $1,100 for the office. The board accepted the CEO report. Peter asked the board to check the different formats of treasurer's reports so he knows how all can read them while integrating programs into it. Budget line items are in line, but resource development has not moved forward as projected. CCB will be spending less than projected. The report was postponed for further updates. For the convention report, Jeff said Tommy Edison will be our convention speaker, a traffic reporter, movie critic, and on YouTube. Eric Bridges will be the ACB speaker. We will have a revised CCB constitution to vote on. CCB is looking for sponsors and exhibitors. A spot for the youth conference is saved. Vita gave the technical operations group update. She said the website is like a construction site. Testers are checking forms and other parts of the site. We should be able to register for the convention online. Please send questions to Vita about online registration. She answers webmaster email. Gabe is sending out some questions for building the framework for the new constitution and bylaws. Another call is on September 20th. The full constitution will be approved by a two-thirds vote. Board members will be paired with other members to check in about board matters. Board members will be paired with chapters and some committees. Updates can be made at executive sessions. Board members need to report to ARDIS their volunteer hours for board activities before the end of the month. The CCB membership committee is having a members at large call. Different conference calling options are being checked. Zoom Cloud Meetings is being explored for another way to meet. The meeting was adjourned. CCB Board Teleconference Minutes Summary, October 12, 2017, approved. November, Judy called the roll and three board members were absent, Gabe Griffith, ARDIS Bazin and Rob Turner. The board minutes were approved for June and August. The board ratified the email board vote approving the computer upgrades and Vista reasonable accommodations request. CEO Paul Shane gave his report. He is hiring the Vista employees. They will start training in November. CCB will be moving the office the second weekend of November. Nicole is going through social media and QuickBooks training. Dining in the dark is set up. CCB needs sponsors for this event. Vista employees cannot do advocacy or handle political efforts or religious meetings. Judy asked Paul to send an overview of what the Vista workers would do. Paul ordered cookbooks from our speaker for sale only in print. Braille ones were too expensive, so none were ordered. Audio ones are downloaded free. Vista members will not get sponsorships. Vita gave the report from the technical operations group and said our website developer is rebuilding our website. The homepage should be working by November 15th. The link for the Vista info and dining in the dark will be first online. At-large members will be able to pay dues online. Chapter info is already up. CCB convention forms will be done by January. It was requested to have the scholarship application online. The developer reports to the TUG and is paid for her contracted amount. The board approved a 3-year contract for website hosting at approximately $1,100 or less. The discussion on the employee manual was postponed. Judy said that Bill 1705 about the guide dog board passed and that board will be sunsetted. Judy told about reimagining philanthropy. See President's message. Some board members are going at their own expense. An executive session occurred where personnel matters were discussed. CCB Board Teleconference Minutes Summary, November 2, 2017, approved December 14. Judy called the meeting to order and ARDIS called the roll. Gail Crossan and Pam Matz were absent. Paul gave his CEO report. He stated that the office is moving on the second weekend of November and the internet and phones should be up by Monday or Tuesday. Vista employees will be in training on Monday the 13th. Peter gave a summary of the treasurer's report. He will send the updated report to the board. The board accepted the employee handbook with changes recommended in email discussions, including changing company to organization, and no group is as important as customers as the members. The board approved forming a subcommittee task force to discuss policies on vacation, sick leave and benefit issues, including holidays. These need to be brought back to the board in December. Jeff gave an update of the upcoming convention program. A pre-convention candidates forum will be held. On Wednesday, employment training and financial literacy training events will be held. In the evening, a tactile art show will be held. Capital Day will be on Thursday from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. with light rail leaving at 7:30 a.m. Other sessions during convention will include a workshop by a blind magician, a Project FEMA luncheon, tech committee, credential and nominating meetings at 3 and 5 p.m., dining in the dark with auction, welcome party 7 to 9 p.m. followed by hospitality. A Friday CCB Women's Breakfast, Brookfield Breakfast Fundraiser, and Blind Alive. The Friday lunch will describe the Google Grant for National Park description, U of H Yosemite. On Friday night, Eric Bridges will speak. On Saturday, the board meeting will be from 7 to 9 a.m., perhaps having one before the convention. On Saturday, luncheons for tech and guide dogs will be held. A scholarship reception will also be included. On Saturday, the new constitution and bylaws will be discussed. A banjo band entertainment by Tommy Edison will perform Saturday night with awards. On Sunday, traditional business will occur with an afternoon river walk. Transportation is being planned for back and forth for the airport. The board approved adjourning the meeting and went into executive session. Personnel matters were discussed. The call ended at 10:10 p.m. CCB Board Teleconference Minutes Summary, December 14, 2017, approved January 11, 2018. Frank Welt called the meeting to order. Those absent were Judy, Sarah, Pam, and Vivian. The board accepted the minutes for October. The executive board meeting was held, and no motions were made during this meeting. The board accepted the November minutes with two corrections. Peter gave the treasurer's report. The board approved requesting the Newell Perry Trust to release $70,000 to the CCB for purposes of paying CCB staff salaries and benefits and continuing support for our website update for the 2018 fiscal year. The board approved the Budget and Finance Committee's recommendation regarding the proposed 2018 budget. The board ratified the email vote approving a 10-day floating holiday schedule. Paul gave his CEO report. He is working on sponsorships for the convention and dining in the dark. He is actively recruiting for another Vista volunteer. Applications are available online. It is hoped convention registration will be online soon. Paul Patch Jr. described a fireworks booth fundraiser. The board approved moving forward. A few board members attended MGRU training and felt it very useful. The board approved adjourning the meeting at 8:20 p.m. Advocacy update, Delta policy regarding service animals by Anthony Stevens via ACB-Leadership. Over the past week, ACB has received multiple calls concerning the new Delta policies regarding service and emotional support animals. The calls pertain to correspondence with Delta employees or contractors conveying misinformation to travelers with a guide dog. ACB has a direct line of communication with Delta management overseeing such policies, and we have made them aware that work still need to get done to assure that customer service agents are presenting accurate information following Delta's revisions of service animal policies. They have responded, indicating that they are looking into the situation. Beginning March 1st, Delta had instituted new policies regarding travelers using emotional support animals. Initially, in a January 18th news release, Delta announced the policy changes would impact both service and emotional support animals. After engagement from ACB and other stakeholders, Delta relaxed their policies on service animals. Below is a link to the most up-to-date Delta policy on service and support animals, www.delta.com/content/www/en_us/traveling-with-us/special-travel-needs/service-animals.html. In some cases, Delta may seek to inquire if an animal is up to date with their rabies vaccination. It is our understanding that this is not expected unless a need arises. In any case, it is a good exercise for any guide dog user to have their dog up to date on vaccinations and have a visible tag indicating such vaccination. We have been told the visible tags will count as appropriate verification. If any issues arise while traveling that pertain to your equal rights as a traveler with a guide dog, request to speak with a complaint resolutions official, CRO, who are appropriately trained to respond to such issues. Please email me with any complaints that take place, and ACB will follow up with the airline and the Department of Transportation. I can be reached at astevens@acb.org. Warmest regards. Anthony Stevens, Director of Advocacy and Governmental Affairs. American Council of the Blind, 1703 North Beauregard Street, Suite 420, Alexandria, Virginia, 22311. Telephone, 202-467-5081. Email, astevens@acb.org. California Council of the Blind Officers and Directors, July 1, 2017. Editor's note, we are indebted to Donna Sanchez, who updates and corrects the list of CCB officers and directors, including the number of the term each is presently serving, the year elected to that term, and the year next up for election. Terms begin on July 1st following election. The presence of an asterisk means that the individual served a partial term before the first full term. Officers. President, Judy Wilkinson, 16 to 18, first term, San Leandro, 510-388-5079C, judy.wilkinson@ccbnet.org. First Vice President, Frank Welt, 16 to 18, first term, San Leandro, 510-541-1442C, frank.welt@ccbnet.org. Second Vice President, Gabe Griffith, 17-19, first term, Concord, 925-768-8195, gabe.griffith@ccbnet.org. Secretary, Artis Bazin, 17-19, second term, Burbank, 818-238-9321H, artis.bazin@ccbnet.org. Treasurer, Peter Pardini, 16-18, fourth term, Mill Valley, 415-990-9202C, peter.pardini@ccbnet.org. Immediate Past President, Jeff Tom, 16 to present, Sacramento, 916-995-3967C, jeff.tom@ccbnet.org. Directors, Gail Crossan, 16 to 18, first term, La Hebra, 562-691-3391H, gail.crossan@ccbnet.org. Sarah Harris, 17 to 19, first term, Fresno, 559-816-1507H, sarah.harris@ccbnet.org. Pamela Metz, 17 to 19, second term, Chatsworth, 818-882-3610H, 818-388-4996C, pamela.metz@ccbnet.org. Charlene Ornelas, 16 to 18, first term, Oceanside, 619-339-6043C, charlene.ornelas@ccbnet.org. Paul Patch Jr., 16 to 18, second term, Sacramento, 916-662-0861, paul.patch@ccbnet.org. Linda Perel, 17 to 19, first term, San Francisco, 415-577-8437C, linda.perel@ccbnet.org. Karen Schroeder, 17 to 19, first term, Sacramento, 760-604-3735C, karen.schroeder@ccbnet.org. Rob Turner, 16 to 18, first term, Sunnyvale, 408-203-9300C, rob.turner@ccbnet.org. Vivian Younger, 17-19, first term, Downey, 562-879-6693C, vivian.younger@ccbnet.org. Publications Committee. Linda Perel, Chair, San Francisco, California, 94112-415-577-8437C, linda.perel@ccbnet.org. Mike Keithley, Editor, Susan Glass, Associate Editor, editor@ccbnet.org. Sarah Harris, Roger Peterson, Bonnie Rennie, Donna Sanchez, Dr. Catherine Schmidt-Whitaker. If you or a friend would like to remember the California Council of the Blind in your will, you can do so by employing the following language. I give, devise, and bequeath unto the California Council of the Blind, a non-profit charitable organization in California, the sum of dollar, or to be used for its worthy purposes on behalf of blind persons. If your wishes are more complex, you may have your attorney communicate with the executive office for other suggested forms. Thank you.